Welcome to the Running in the Center of the Universe podcast. I'm Ashland Dave, and I'm recording live from my podcast studio in Ashland, Virginia. Thanks for coming along. And this is Ashland Dave, and this is Running in the Center of the Universe podcast, episode 174. It is the week of March 16th, I guess the Ides of March, or I guess that's March 15th. Thanks for coming along. Appreciate you downloading the show, as always. And if you're a new listener, I'd like to welcome you. Hopefully, you'll go back and listen to some older episodes and check out more of the podcast. If you're been one of my loyal listeners, definitely appreciate you coming back and staying loyal to the show. I certainly enjoy doing the podcast, and will continue to do it as long as it is fun. Okay, we're going to talk about the Graveyard 100 in this show. I'll get to that in just a minute. But I had a great run this morning. It started off in the rain, and then by the time I was done, the sun had come out just a little bit, and I dried out. I was, it was about a 14-miler, and I really needed that for some self-confidence, getting ready to go into the Blue Ridge Marathon late next month. Just having some motivational issues. Sandy, if you're listening to the show, I will be ready. It won't be pretty, but I will finish the Blue Ridge Marathon on April 20th. Don't worry. We just might have to take some breaks here and there. I've just been having a lot of trouble getting out with the long runs on the weekends because of stuff that comes up or foul weather or, you know, any other number of excuses. So this show is about the Graveyard 100, and this was an ultra marathon down in the Outer Banks of North Carolina. It's called the Graveyard because the Atlantic Ocean off the Outer Banks is considered the graveyard of the Atlantic for sunken ships. There's thousands of sunken ships off of the Outer Banks of North Carolina. And just last year, the Bounty, one of the replicas of the HMS Bounty that sank over there, which was very tragic. So let's get into this episode, which is about the Graveyard 100. All right, let me talk about the weekend. And I guess I'll start with Friday. I took Friday off from work, and race director Brandon Wilson, and he runs a company called Race NC. It's RAC capital ENC, and I think it's kind of means Race Eastern North Carolina. And he's got a race company that he runs with his wife and his family, and he puts on lots of endurance events, and this is the second year putting on the Graveyard 100. And so what he did for Friday, he had a returning complimentary lunch for returning participants and staff of the race, and since I had volunteered to be the finish line coordinator, I was invited to that. So I went ahead and went, and got to meet some of the other staff and people that are running the aid stations, photographer, and a couple of the other returning participants. Only one of which I recognized from the year before, a fellow named Brad, who also ran the 100K last year. I ran the 100K of the Graveyard 100 last year. And if you're a regular listener to the podcast, you know that you've heard me talk about this race before. I did it. Last year was the inaugural year. It's a ultra marathon that is in the Outer Banks of North Carolina, and it's held on the weekend of when daylight saving goes into effect. And it's two events. It's a 100-miler point to point and a 100K point to point. I did the 100K last year. That being the longest distance I've ever attempted and finished. So I got to meet several new people at the lunch, which I thought was pretty cool. And one thing I figured out pretty quick was that it was kind of some of the people that were there were definitely 100 milers. They don't really do distances of less. And so it's kind of humbling when, you know, you're pretty damn proud of the fact that you've done 100K, and to other people that is really small potatoes. So it was a pretty humbling situation, and which is good for me. It's good for me to experience stuff like that. I guess in some ways I kind of have a little bit of an ego,
But I definitely know when to check it, and I had to check it. So I just listened a lot, and I listened to other people talk about their attempts and finishes at 100-mile races. Met a fella, Ryan, from Toronto. He was down there with a guy named Tim, who they had met up in D.C. and traveled down together. Unfortunately, Ryan didn't finish, and this was, I think, his second attempt at 100. He's done several attempts and never finished. People like him, and there was another lady named Kim from Texas. Got to listen to her. She's a finisher of Bad Water. She'd done the Keys 100. I of course, have experience running the Keys, the 50-mile of the Keys 100. And, of course, watched movies about Bad Water. So I knew about some of these events, yet still really couldn't partake but so much in conversation other than to ask questions. And so it really was a real good opportunity for me just to listen to other people talk rather than have me talk. And that was good. That was really good to learn from other people and listen. So after that, there was some downtime because there was going to be a pre-race meeting for all participants at 6 o'clock that evening. So I had, we finished up from that about 1 o'clock. So I had several hours in the afternoon to kill, and my plan was to do a training run after I checked into my hotel. So I got a little bit of an early check-in, which was really cool. And then I attempted to do a training run, and the sustained winds coming out of the north down on the barrier island there were brutal. There were some reports of 25-mile-per-hour sustained, and it was, I don't know what it was. I don't really know how to predict what it is, but let's just say that when I was running northbound on Route 12, you know, all my clothes just and I had to wear my hat backwards, otherwise it would have just blown right off. So that kind of gives you an idea a little bit of how hard the wind was. And of course, running south was easy, but you can't really run south from your destination without either walking or running north. So what I decided to do, and I was determined to get in a 7 mile, so what I did was I ran kind of east to west. I ran there's lots of cross streets, so I ran from the hotel, I ran west to the bypass, and then I'd turn around and go east and go on out to one of the walkways out to the beach, and then I would go north a block and then do the run out to the beach and then go westbound over to the bypass. So I kind of just did like a huge square with a couple out and backs to the walkways out to the beach, and I found that to be pretty cool. I kind of changed it up a little bit here and there, and I really didn't do more than a block or so north when I did these circuit routes, so I didn't really have to run into the headwind. And before I knew it, I had made my 7 mile goal, so I was pretty pleased with that and very happy. I went back and got cleaned up and relaxed some, and then headed out to the pre-race meeting. And this is where the adventure started. I was going down Route 12 to the pre-race meeting, actually north. Route 12 is what they call the beach road. The locals call it the beach road because it's right along the beach, and there are beach houses to the east, which sit right on the water, and then there's beach houses to the west. And there had been a lot of washover recently. There was already reports that Route 12 to the very south had been closed and then reopened as heavy machinery was moving sand off the road, and so there was a little bit of a situation where the race might have been changed. And what happened, the reason I knew about this is right when I got to the restaurant, Brandon was already there in his car, and he signaled me over to his vehicle. We were sitting in there, and he proceeded to tell me how there was a very high chance that the National Park Service, who grants the permit for running to the south, was going to have the road closed, and so the 100-miler was going to be an out and back, south 50 miles, and then turn around and go north 50 miles into that headwind. So that was going to prove to be a pretty brutal experience for the front runners, those that run fast enough where they're going to be running into that headwind during the day. Of course, the wind was going to go down at night, in the evening into the night. And that also meant that the majority of the 100K route was going to be northbound into a headwind. 100K route or 100K race would be starting at 3 p.m. The 100-miler starting at 5 a.m. on Saturday, March 9th. So it was going to prove to be quite a situation. It was kind of up in the air. Brandon wasn't going to know until Saturday morning at 9, and he was going to make the announcement through the aid station captain, so they would let the runners know that came through, and they could let the crews know, and the word could get out that way. I think he was going to also utilize the Facebook page to kind of get information out. Well, so let me get back to my drive. So I was driving north, I don't know, 5 or 6 miles from my hotel to the the pre-race meeting. And I was going up Route 12, the beach road, and I noticed that there was flooding. And at first it was just kind of puddles that would form into the northbound lane, and then it got to the point where the puddles were across both lanes. Cars were going really slow. We're talking maybe, 4 inches of water. And then before I knew it, I kind of got, I was looking for a way to get back over to the bypass. And before I could, I ran over some debris and kind of had a little weird sound on the bottom of the car. And so I get to the pre-race meeting. Brandon has the meeting, talks about how he's not sure where the finish line is going to be yet. Come out from the meeting after about an hour, and my front left passenger tire is pretty much flat, almost all the way flat. Well, I was about a block away from a BP station, one that I'd been in before, and I knew they had air there, and I knew they had different products inside. So I went inside, I got up there without ruining the tire or the rim or anything, and sprayed in a bottle of that Fix-A-Flat stuff, and then went over and paid my dollar and got the tire pumped up, and that worked. It got the tire all the way up, and while I was there, I climbed up under the car and went ahead and checked the pressure of the spare, which I didn't do before I left home, but I went ahead and made sure that was fully inflated. And at that point, wasn't really sure what I was going to do. I knew the following morning I was going to have to address it one way or the other. But I really wanted to get in a double-digit training run, because I was going to have almost till noon free time before I was going to be meeting Brandon at the finish line to set up the finishing. Made a shed with a window in it to keep us out of the weather, and we're going to be setting up all the equipment at the finish line. That was kind of my main task with volunteering for the race. So I didn't really know any places in the Outer Banks of North Carolina to go get my car serviced, and of course at this point in time it was 6:45 on Friday evening. So I went south on the bypass, I don't know, about a mile, and I saw this business over on the right side called Tread Quarters, and clearly a tire store, and the sign out front said open 7:30 to 7. So I pulled right in there, and knowing that the place was getting ready to close in 15 minutes, and of course it's a Friday night, and I think the last thing anybody who runs a business wants is for somebody to come in right at closing time. Well, I pulled in and went inside and asked them if they had time to take a look at a tire that just might need to be plugged, and that's what they did. Got the tire plugged, and at that point it was just a big sign of relief. Also, at that time, the mechanic pulled out a piece of wood that had gotten stuck up under the suspension. So when I drove over some debris, I'm not really exactly sure what I drove over, but pretty much believe that it popped the tire. And I think the weird noise I heard was the wood getting wedged up underneath the suspension. So I headed back to my hotel, stopped by and picked up some food on the way. Went in, relaxed, thinking I'd solve my problem, and just kind of patted myself on the back a little bit for, go ahead and taking care of it. And had a couple beers and watched some TV, and pretty much, I guess I went to bed probably about 10 o'clock. And, the next morning I went down to the lobby to get my coffee, and I thought, let me just go outside and just make sure that the tire's good to go, just so I don't have anything to worry about. But if it was flat, then, I could go ahead and get it changed up. And, at that point, I had, you know, if I didn't go running, I would have several hours to go back to that same store and get a new tire. Well, when I went out to the parking lot, I could already see that the car was not, you know, level. I could tell that it was dipping in the front, and I looked up, and man, that front left, the front driver's side tire was just totally, totally flat. So I kind of patted myself on the back again for making sure that I had inflated the spare, and I went ahead and started changing it, and I had the benefit of several spectators, which I thought was kind of funny. I just kind of chuckled to myself a little bit. The place where I was staying was serving as a lodging for a group of power line workers, and they were all in the lobby. They were in the lobby when I was getting my coffee, and you know, if you can imagine a crew of people, they all, you know, that wear reflective vests and work out on the road and block off roads to, I guess, work on the power lines or whatever. It wasn't a company familiar to me, so I guess they had them come from out of state or something. And, you know, they'd come outside, have the smoke breaks, and I could tell they were watching me. And like a dumbass, I'm not that good at changing a tire, so it took me a little bit longer. And but I got the spare. Of course, you know, when people are watching, it always takes a little bit longer, right? So I got the tire change, and then went on up and went inside and got something to eat, and went up to the room and just made sure I had everything that I needed. I went ahead and proceeded up to the same tire store and went in, and the same guy was working the counter, a guy named Brian. It was really nice the night before. You know, just really cool. And I told him, hey man, I'm back. And I said, it's, you know, totally flat now. I said, I guess I'll just have to wait on it. And there were three other people sitting in the lobby, so I knew I was going to have, you know, some wait time. And so my training run was out the window. I had a little bit of anxiety because I was really hoping to get in a 10-miler. There was plenty of time. I would have been able to do it if I didn't have the tire problem. So I sat there for about an hour and a half, and I guess I got out of there closer to about 10 o'clock and had to get a new tire. And the cool thing about it was is they credited the work done the night before to the price, and I thought that was pretty cool on the part of the manager. And so I fooled around with that, and the lesson I learned from that is don't ever drive through standing water. In fact, I should have known that already, not to drive through standing water. But this was, you know, this wasn't a river or anything. This was just water that had flooded over the berm that blocks the ocean from the barrier island. So I went ahead and headed back to the room. I had to check out by 11, and I kind of just barely made that. And at that point in time, I'd already gotten word through email that the race was going to be an out and back starting in Kerala, and it was going to be southbound 50 miles, and it was going to turn around at the Bonner Bridge, which is the 2-mile long bridge that goes southbound. I think it goes over what's called Oregon Inlet, and that was really the highlight of my experience down there last year. And really the biggest disappointment of the route being changed for me personally was that I wasn't going to have the benefit of driving the route that I ran last year and kind of reminiscing a little bit. And I was kind of looking forward to that, you know, that drive down to Hatteras, all the way down, and just kind of going over the route again. And one of the main, what I was going to be able to do on the way down there, I was going to be able to stop off at a friend's house who was down there, who was going to be volunteering at the Rodanthe Community Center at one of the aid stations. So that was all out the window, and what that meant was that Brandon's time schedule for setting up the finish line was a lot different, and I wasn't going to be needed right at noon. In fact, it was all kind of up in the air. So at that point, I was kind of a man without a country. I didn't really have anywhere to go specifically to hang out and really just relax and wait. He had offered that I could go to hang out at one of the houses at one of the aid stations, which I did for about an hour, watched a little TV. But I really wanted to get in, you know, I was really wanting to get in that training run, but I didn't have anywhere to really shower afterwards. I didn't bring a towel, and I didn't want to use, you know, any of the house towels. And I thought it was just kind of a weird thing to, you know, take a shower in somebody else's place where you don't really know them. And Although, you know what, in hindsight, I think it would have been fine, but I felt uncomfortable doing it, so I didn't want to do it. And so after a while there, I got in the car and made sure I was loaded up with food for something to eat that evening, for Saturday evening, and then something for lunch the next day. And I went on up to the new Finnish headquarters, which was going to be the inn at Kerala Light. And that took a little while to get up there. I got a call from Brandon, and he told me I could go hang out in the room that he was using up there. So I did that, and again, I had some time where I probably could have, again, changed into, you know, my running clothes and gotten in a run, and then even then gotten cleaned up. But you know, I would have been using their stuff, and I just thought it would have been a little discourteous. So I just said, you know what, hey man, I'm not gonna worry about it. I'm not gonna get the training run in. That's fine. The weekend's not really about me. It's about helping these people finish the ultra marathon and run the finish line. So at that point, it was just kind of a waiting game. The front runner, Valmir Nunez, who is he's the record holder for Badwater, and holds several Brazilian and South American records. I mean, clearly a world-class runner, an ultra-marathoner. He was projected to finish between 13 and a half and 14 hours. So once Brandon got up there with all the equipment for the finish line, we had about an hour to set everything up. And at that point, it felt really good because my assistance was really needed. We got everything set up, got the finishing chute set up, and we got everything done before Valmir finished. And it was really cool. That was the first time I'd ever seen somebody win an ultra marathon in person. Of course, I've seen that movie Unbreakable. I've seen some other ultra marathon movies. But this was the first time I've seen somebody actually win the race in person. And also, he didn't speak any. He spoke very little English, mostly Portuguese. There was a translator there, somebody that was crewing for him. So we got a chance to meet him and talk with him a little bit, and he just did an outstanding effort. He had finished 100 miles in 13:48, which you know, just unbelievable, really is. And then the second guy came in, Olivier was his last name. I can't remember what his first name was. Again, very talkative at the end, and then also got to see the top female finish, Connie Gardner, and she ran, I believe it was 14:33 and some change. Again, just an outstanding effort. But unfortunately for her, her daughters who had come to the race had somehow managed to get down to the true finish where it was supposed to be when the road had been opened, and then they got stuck down there. They apparently got their cars stuck in sand or stuck somehow, and they had all her finishing gear, so she was kind of screwed. And it was a real shame that I guess her daughters didn't know where the finish was going to be once it was changed. I guess they didn't get the word or message wasn't given out to them, and they got stuck down there. Now, if you're not familiar with the Outer Banks of North Carolina, let me just kind of give you a little bit of an image. The it's a barrier island that's on the coast of North Carolina, and it obviously goes north to south. And if you can imagine 100 miles of that, and then having to kind of tuck around at the bottom around Cape Hatteras to the southwest, that's what the route was going to be, and that's where her daughters ended up. So even after I left at noon here on Sunday, she still had not hooked up with her family, and they still had her stuff, and so she was still in her clothes from the day before, hadn't been able to freshen up or anything, and I felt really bad for her. A couple interesting stories. Most everybody was very appreciative of Brandon's effort to salvage the event, even though it was an out and back, which to some people dropped because mentally that was just too brutal to handle. Other people were just thankful that they were able to do it, and I was able to collect the times at the finish for a good portion of the evening before I turned in about 12:30. For a couple hours, and a fellow named Rob from West Virginia came down, and he was pulling the overnight kind of the overnight shift at the finish line. Brandon stayed up and awarded medals to all the finishers. And it was just really cool. Actually, Buckles, the 100-milers got Buckles, and then the 100K got finishing medals. And they looked a little bit bigger than last year. I'll have to go, when I get home, I have to check my medals to see. I think the ones this year were a bit bigger, and they just really looked good. So, but the accommodations at the finish were a little up in the air because he had to get to salvage getting rooms for the elite runners and for staff. He had reserved all the rooms at an inn in Hatteras, and he lost all that money. And I was going to have a room there that I was going to be able to have access to almost exclusively, at least for the initial part, that was reserved for Mike Morton, who had to pull out at the last minute due to a stress fracture, so he was not able to participate. So there was going to be an open room that Brandon said I could use, and so I had, you know, this vision of setting up the finish line, you know, going for a run down in deep Hatteras, and then getting a nice shower and with fresh towels, and then just hanging out and reading a book and waiting for the runners. But it couldn't have been any more different than what I was envisioning due to the course change. Of course, the course had to be changed because the whole southern part of the Barrier Islands were inaccessible. Or at least not fully. There was Brandon had gotten word that the road would be opened around noon. However, there was going to be heavy machinery working down there, and pedestrian traffic was not going to be appreciated or welcomed. So I think he made the wise decision to turn the race around at the halfway mark and salvage a good event, have solid finish line, and getting people accommodated at the end. So that made the accommodations at the end, the new finish, kind of interesting. There were some couples that had worked at aid stations, you know, male, female, that had been up really, really early in the morning, and so they were starting to peter out around 8-9 at night. So some of those staff rooms, the beds, kind of started getting taken up by some of these, you know, male, female couples. And there's nothing really much weirder than setting up your camping cot in the corner of a room where, you know, a male and a female are, that you don't really know, are sleeping in the bed. So that's what I did initially. Just I got my stuff set up, and then I ended up moving to another room that was open that ended up, and I set up over by the sliding glass door, just set up my cot, because I was really only going to sleep probably about 5 hours, if that. And I got really lucky because I was in there by myself, and then a guy that had dropped at the halfway mark came in there, and he slept in the bed, and thankfully he didn't snore, and he probably heard me snoring. So it ended up working out okay, and then I got up around 5 and headed back out to the finish and worked that till noon. There were a couple people that didn't make the cutoff, which was unfortunate. All of them had planned to finish the distance. They just weren't going to get finishing time recorded. And once I think there were two people left, there was already Rob was still at the finish. He had been up all night, and Brandon, of course, was there. And at that point, I said, "Hey, man, you know, do you need me for anything else? If not, I really can clear up and start heading home." And so it was really, you know, so that's what I'm doing now. I've got about another half hour before I get home, and I just thought before I started getting into something else at home, I'd go ahead and record some thoughts from the weekend. I'm really glad I went down there. Really glad I helped out. I think my help was needed. I think it was valued and appreciated. And really thought I think the Graveyard 100 is a pretty cool ultra marathon. Not only because it's, you know, close by, but it's a road ultra. And it's out in an area of North Carolina that I really like a lot, which is the Outer Banks area. I'm kind of familiar with it. I know where stuff is, with the exception of car service businesses, but now I know where one is. And I think it's a great venue. And hopefully I'll be asked back next year to help out again. I would like to attempt another 100K someday, but I'm just not sure that that's really in the cards for me. I had such a hard time last year. I did finish, but it was really, really difficult. And I kind of would rather finish something that where I feel a little bit better at the end rather than just salvaging the scraps. And that's why I think I'm probably better suited for 50K up to 50 miles. And so I guess at this point I'm going to set a goal for doing another 50 miler, I guess maybe in the next 2 years. I don't know how if I'll be able to stick to that goal, but I would like to get out there and experience another 50 miler. And I want it to be a course that I haven't done before. I have to look for one and see what I can afford, see what's within traveling distance on one that's going to be pretty cool. I got nothing against the Graveyard 100. I got everything for it. It's just I'm just not sure. If he added a 50-mile distance to that race, then I would definitely be all over it. But he's not gonna do that. He wants to keep it at the 100K or 100-mile distance, and I think that's great. One funny funny story: one of the guys came in that he told was that he had been running by himself for a good portion of the night, and he came across some people camping. And I can't really remember where he said people were camping. And it was dark. I think he said it was the middle of the night. And he said it was these two people that were camping were smoking some grass. And they just looked at him and said, "Hey, man, what are you doing?" He's like, "I'm running." And they just kind of looked at him. it was kind of funny the way he told it, just coming across some people that are just smoking some dope out there in the middle of nowhere in the middle of the night. Nobody vomiting at the end, nothing like that. Everybody was pretty much in high spirits when they finished. One of the cruel things about this event was when people came up initially passing the finish line, they had to go north another 2.2 miles or so and then turn around and come back to make the distance. And that's probably one of the cruelest things you can do to somebody is tell them that they're not finished yet. They got to go up a couple more miles and then turn around. But that's the way it goes with ultras. They're never easy, and you don't always know what's gonna happen. Met a lot of new people, and everybody was really nice. Couple of interesting characters that have done some serious stuff. Got at the end, got a chance to chit chat with Connie Gardner quite a bit, and not nothing for the podcast or anything like that. She was just hanging around the finish line watching people finish, and just she had a lot to say about different things, and she'd been all over the world with her ultra running, and so it was kind of neat to listen to her talk about some of her experiences. Unfortunately, couldn't really talk to Valmer that much because just the language thing, which was unfortunate, but he was clearly out there encouraging and clapping for the runners that were coming in, and to me that just shows a lot of class for people who are top in the field to come out there and see the other people that finish. I just think that shows a lot of class for these people that are clearly elites and really run these things in half the time that it takes the regular folks. I want to mention a couple other obstacles that the race director had to overcome, and I really think his ability to move on the fly and set up logistics, completely 180 turnaround were pretty remarkable. Most of his stuff for the finish was in a storage area in Frisco, which he was cut off from, which included generators and other things. So he couldn't get to any of that stuff, including signs and other non-perishable stuff that was needed. So he had to go purchase things. And one, he had to purchase another generator. He had to purchase jacks and some other things to stabilize the timing trailer. All these things being in a storage area they couldn't get to. Two was his wife's ability to then set up food in a new location. Just remarkable logistics. I was pretty impressed. And of course, there's lots of help with the volunteers and people driving the shuttle buses and moving stuff around. But he was able to, get communication out there. And for a while there, I kind of felt like I could have been doing more. But he had it all covered. And, of course, I didn't have really any room in my car to carry anything. I had a smaller vehicle, and I had all my stuff that was in the car. And so I had really no space to help transport stuff. But he had the big passenger van. He had three 15-passenger vans. that were being used to move stuff around. And he had all that covered. And I just thought that was pretty remarkable. He had to move everything that was going to be at the finish that was in. He then had to set up at a new location, reserve new rooms at a place that thankfully had vacancies, and then convince the innkeeper to let him take over the hotel and then set up the finish right in front. You know, and there were other guests at the hotel that probably wanted a quiet weekend and not, you know, an influx of people. Although the good thing about ultra runners is that when they're done, they're not really partying. They're very chilled. And just a few people stayed there. Some other people were being carted down to the Hampton Inn, which was about 2 or 3 miles to the south. That being, the original plan was that they were going to be carted from the finish in Hatteras back to the Hampton Inn, because the Hampton Inn was a real good location for people to stay the night before the start of the race, because it was kind of close to the start. So, Brandon, I don't think you listened to the podcast, but my hat's off to you. You are very good with logistics, and I look forward to hopefully being asked back next year. And I'll have some more thoughts about the race here a little bit later in the podcast.
All right, let's get to the email bag section of the show. And I do have an email from David Williams, also known as Mechanicsville Dave. And when I get to his email, I'll talk a little bit more about the Graveyard 100. Heard from Richard out of the Woodlands, Texas. And he did the Woodlands Half Marathon in late February. And they also have a full marathon down there. That's his local race. He said the weather was terrific, 38 degrees for the entire run. He had a little bit of a, if you know Richard, you know that he's been listening to the podcast from the very beginning. And definitely likes to do those marathons and do that Texas Independence Relay. He had a big, his training season, the past training season, was kind of a washout. And that's why he only did the half marathon. Just looking to finish, which he did. And he's going to take a couple weeks off. Reboot the training session and then start beginning the foundation work for next season's marathon. So, well done, Richard. Nice to hear from you, as always, and I really do appreciate hearing from you. And thanks for listening to the podcast, as always. Okay, David Williams. This is the friend that I referenced in the podcast that I forgot to mention his name. He's the one that has a place down in the Rodanthe area of the Outer Banks, and he was going to volunteer at the aid station down there for the Graveyard 100. However, the course change just eliminated for him to volunteer, as well as everybody down there. What the race director Brandon did was just reused each aid station, and so David was not able to volunteer, although he was willing to do so. And So Dave, you and I think he was going to make his way up to the finish line, but they got stuck with the road closure or something like that. So this is Mechanicsville Dave. This is the guy. This is the reason I have the moniker Ashland Dave, is because we were on the same training team some years ago, and we were on the same group, and we're both named Dave. And so somebody just called me Ashland Dave, and that's why I picked that up. So anyway, Dave, I'm glad you listened to the show, and it was really nice to meet your wife down there at the pre-race briefing. And sorry we didn't get the hook up while we were down there, but I'm sure we will at some point in time. And always nice to hear from you. Appreciate you listening to the show. Also heard from Steve. Now, Steve, I mentioned before, is doing a fundraiser for Crohn's disease, and I linked to his website in the previous show, and what I want to go ahead and do is link to that again. It's an active.com donate site. I'm going to link to that at ashlanddave.podbean.com because his website is too much to put out. Nobody would ever remember it. And I'm going to try to set up an interview with him at some point in time. So, Steve, if you're still listening to the show, we will definitely do that. He's local, which is really cool. So it's always cool to hook up with a local runner through the podcast and talk a little bit about his fundraising efforts. So we'll do that, Steve. Let's definitely stay in touch about that. We'll put that in a show before your event, which I think is sometime in June, if I recall correctly. Also heard from, let's see, well, I want to just do a little shout out to friends that are running the Shamrock Marathon this weekend. It'll be Dashlin Tom, a friend named Nick, and then a friend named Judd and his wife. Judd being a first-time marathoner, and we'll see how he does. I just hope the weather is good enough for him down there, because it looks like it was a little rough here today. And the last email is from Bonnie over at Aces, and the reason I bring this up is because I've offered these before, and these are the movies, the DVDs, the running DVDs that I've made. I've got several. One is of the Graveyard 100. I've got them of the Mountain Masochist, the Keys 100 down in Florida. These are amateur documentaries that actually kind of do tell quite a bit of a story, and they're pretty decent quality, and I offer these for free, and I'll send them to you, and just send me an email at ashlanddave@gmail.com, and then all you got to do is tell me which one you want. If you go on ashlanddave.podbean.com and go back a couple episodes, you'll see the whole list. And all I do is just ask that you send a donation to Ashland Christian Emergency Services, and that's totally on your honesty. I don't follow up on that, but I do get notes from Bonnie from time to time when she has gotten donations from people in different parts of the country. So that makes so what that tells me is that the process is working. So if you're interested in any of those DVDs, go to ashlanddave.podbean.com. Go back a couple episodes, and you'll see. As a matter of fact, what I'll do is I'll just check that right now, and you can go see if I can tell you which episode that is. If you go back to, looks like, episode number 171, which is on the homepage there, there's a list of all the different videos that you can get. It looks like there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 7 different video DVDs, and I think what I'm able to do is I put a handful of those on one disc, so you don't have to pop in different discs. And you could probably sit down for an hour, hour and a half, and watch some of these races. It's not as good as the movie Unbreakable, but there is some video from the trail, from the road, what have you, and I think you might like it if you're interested in it. So just send me an email at ashlanddave@gmail.com. If you have any questions about that, I'd be happy to answer them. All right, well, that's it for this episode of Running the Center of the Universe podcast. I'll be back in 2 weeks with another show, and I'll be interviewing Steve probably within two to three shows from now. Definitely want to get an interview in there before he does his event, which I think is in June. I'll have to check on that. Steve, send me an email, ashlanddave@gmail.com. Let me know if I erred in that. So we'll get that together. So thanks for listening, and this is Ashland Dave, and I'm running in the center of the universe, Ashland, Virginia, reminding you to run to the finish and keep on running, and don't forget to hug your kids. Y'all have a good week.
The 2013 Ashland Railroad Run. Come race the rail in Ashland, Virginia. Join us on Saturday, April 27th for the 35th annual running of one of Virginia's oldest road races alongside the tracks and through the historic town of Ashland, Virginia. The center of the universe. The certified 10K race is a favorite spring ritual among runners from around the Commonwealth and beyond. It's a great race for setting a PR. There's also a 5K fun run and a 1 mile kids race. The kids race has cool prizes. Join hundreds of your friends and come to the center of the universe on April 27th and race the rail. If you're lucky, you might be able to run alongside a huge moving train. For more information, go to hanoverarts.org or email ashlanddave@gmail.com. You can also go to Race It and type railroad in the search box. I was a 5K marshal last year and will be again this year, so I can't wait. Run Ashland first.
See you there.
Blue didn't say anything.